Richardson has joined us today because this is an issue close to his heart, and we're very pleased to have you with us.
Thank you for allowing me to be here.
And we have a very full agenda today. It's an informational meeting on China and the Chinese education system. I want to acknowledge Dave Porter. Dave is the instigator of this committee hearing. I'm very grateful for the massive numbers of emails that he inflicted upon us to get this to happen. But I do appreciate your help, Mr. Porter, and your inspiration to get this done. Ladies and gentlemen, since we do have a very full agenda of some very wonderful people here to provide information, we have three different panels, one from the University of Oregon, one from Portland State, and one from Oregon State University. And we also have Bob Wildner, the Executive Director of the Oregon International Council, with us. So what I'm hoping to do is have each panel take about 20 minutes for presentation, and then there'll be about 10 minutes for question and answers from the committee, and we'll move on, make sure everyone has a chance to present. So if we're clear on that, I would appreciate that. Also, just a little advance warning, if anyone has their cell phones on, even if you have them turned down low, if you turn them off, it helps with the sound system in this particular committee hearing room. Thank you for your cooperation on that. With no further ado, I would like to welcome the University of Oregon. Thank you for being here, and gentlemen, please let us know what you know.
Well, good afternoon, Ms. Chair Buckley and Representative Lin. It's good to see you again.
Thank you.
In your office area. And also honorable members of the committee. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to talk about the importance and the relevance of China to the education economic growth need of Oregon. But before we start the testifying, I'd like to take this opportunity, because it's Chinese New Year time, I'd like to wish each one of you and everyone present at the hearing the Happy Spring Festival. So good health, good fortune, and prosperity to you and your loved ones.
Thank you very much.
During the Chinese New Year, it's a custom for people to have a good wish. Well, what do you wish? Whatever is your wish, it will become true when you make the wish during the Chinese New Year time. So on behalf of our panel and the panels of my colleagues from PSU and OSU, is our wish today at the hearing is this is the beginning of the day where Oregon legislature leaders, higher education leaders, and business leaders come together to develop a China agenda that will really help the state to grow educationally, economically, and culturally. With that, I would like to, for the record, that my name is Chunsheng Zhang, and I'm the Vice Provost for International Affairs and Outreach at the University of Oregon. And by the way, I joined the university last May, so I don't know as much as my colleagues know about the university yet, but I'm comfortable as fast as I can. I am a first-generation Chinese-American and immigrated to this country 20 years ago. But I'm sitting in front of you testifying as a former student and instructor of a second language, English as a second language. I think it's pertinent to the hearing today, because based on my current speaking proficiency, that you will be able to tell that to learn any foreign language, it is essential to learn it when you are young. That's what one of the messages we like to hope to deliver. The other thing I think we all want to say is that international education is one of the largest commodities that our country has, and also for Oregon. And we hope that we can take a larger share of the educational commodity in the global higher education market. Based on our data, I'm going to refer to U of O at this point. Last year, we have 700 students coming from China, but we have only 19 students went to China to study abroad. So you have a ratio about 15 to 1. And this you will be most interested in hearing, because this ratio is the only positive trade balance between United States and China. This is the only area we have a positive trade balance. That's on the positive side. It's good. But on the long term, I'm afraid we may not be able to afford such a positive balance? Simply because, again, this is only a snapshot. When you have 15 Chinese students knows, understands, studies here, and you have only one Oregon student, I mean, this is, again, using R as an example, you can figure out when it's to collaborate, to compete, whatever. You can win a game 15-1, whether it's football, basketball, whatever game. I don't think you can win that way. So that's what we're trying to do. Before we move to the next level, I think we can today, the Chinese characters on the left-hand side is called 十年树木, 百年树人, meaning it takes about 10 years to grow a tree and to make the tree strong, but takes 100 years to grow, quote-unquote, well-educated generations for generations of people. And this hearing is all about the human capital of Oregon as a state. to help me to make the point very clear, I have my distinguished colleagues join me from the U of O, Dean Jim Bean from the College of Business, and he's going to address mostly the China's relevance and opportunities for the economic growth of the state. And I have Professor Steve Duran, who is the head of the East Asian Language and Literature Department, will address the importance of learning language and culture, whatever our future generations choose to do. And then we have Dr. Carl Falsgraf, the director of Center for Applied Second Language Studies, will briefly talk about the very innovative, the leading edge, the only federally funded K-16 Chinese immersion program in the country, which is housed in the state of Oregon. So with that, I'm sure my colleagues from PSU, OSU will add a lot more from their perspectives. I know I need to run in terms of speaking. So in terms of relevance, if you look at the what we have provided to you in the packet and also on this PowerPoint, that education, as I mentioned earlier, is one of the largest commodity, but according to Asia Society, by 2015, there will be 17,000 students in the state of Oregon who will pick up and study Chinese. Then we need to respond to it, and I think your committee is absolutely in the position to make that change. Energize the economy. China is currently Oregon's third largest export partner with $1.3 billion based in the data in 2005. But also, international students are spending about $150 million here in the state. And over 20 million comes from Chinese and Taiwanese students. So the economic impact is huge. This triangle, I also want to just add very briefly, this is the U of O's internationalization strategy, the triangle. Through international engagement, we want to enhance the academic opportunities and distinctions. And we also want to, through international engagement, to energize the economic growth of the state. And also through international engagement, to enrich the cultural experiences for every single Oregonian. And I'm a new one at this point. There are many, many opportunities that both educational and economical. For us as a smaller state to go to Shanghai Pudong or Shenzhen to develop programs, maybe we're kind of 10 years behind California or Washington as states. But as President Hu Jintao, the current president of China, has made a commitment that making my hometown, which I'm very pleased to present, is Tianjin, is the Shanghai Pudong in the north of China. So this is a great opportunity for the business community of Oregon to go and do business with the new economic place. Okay, I need to run. Oh, okay. Okay, so I think what we're trying to do is, since you have the information, what I would say that in order to engage China, we need to do three things. One is economically, educationally, but really engage them, we really need to teach and learn Chinese culture, Chinese values, and Chinese customs. Learning Chinese language, actually, one of the important thing is to teach more people to learn Chinese. Chinese learning is not as difficult as many people think about. It's not difficult. If you start early, learning any language is about the same. Actually, I'm going to demonstrate a little bit. Learning Chinese can be fun and it can be easy with a couple of slides here very, very quickly. Chinese is the only language that I know of that came from human beings' observation of nature and began to write it up. There are two characters I'm going to show you. You can go ahead. Is the two things we have a lot in Oregon. That is, the first character looks like a tree if you think about it. And then if you put two trees together, it's a wood. If you put three trees together, there's a forest. So that's what happened in Oregon. The next one, we also have a lot of them. Some characters here. If you look, all these characters on the left-hand side, there are three dots supposed to be raindrops and water. So if I tell you the first letter that says tear, the right-hand side is the eye. So the water comes from the eye will be tears. But the second letter is the letter, so you know that's water. Water comes from somewhere. Gan meaning you work hard physically. You sweat. And then on the right-hand side, the other four characters, you can see. So in Chinese character, whenever you see the three dots on the left, even though you don't know what it means or how to pronounce it, you say, you know what? This word has something to do with water. You are absolutely right. So that's simple. But you can't do that with English, right? So the learning language is really, if we start it early, we can do it very right. And University of Oregon has very long commitment to engage China, East Asia, and we have the faculty expertise in teaching languages, literature, anything related to China and East Asia. Actually, the national trend, there are 35% increase in learning Chinese based on last year's. And I hope that will also happen in the state of Oregon. We also not only have our own strength on campus, but we also have our right partners. And we're going to show you the Asia Pacific Rim universities, which University of Oregon is the only one representing the state of Oregon. And these are the top-notch research university from the Pacific Rim. And University of Oregon, under the leadership of President Frohmeyer, was a founding member of this association. So there are many, many academic, economic opportunities for us. I know, given that the limited time, I won't be able to go through all the names of the all the partners we have, but I'm going to ask our dean of Business College to talk specifically on the economic part of it.
Thank you, Chairman Buckley, and the rest of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. Again, I'm Jim Bean, Dean of the Lundquist College. I'm also an advisory professor of industrial engineering at Shanghai Jiao Tong University. How fast are things changing with China? This is today's Oregonian. The headline of the business section is a 73% growth in export from the state of Oregon to China in 2006 over 2005. But this is something that we're seeing in the press now. The business community in Oregon has understood this well since long before I came back to Oregon 2.5 years ago. In my numerous meetings with business leaders in the state, the most common thing I have heard from them about what they need from our educational system is more people with an understanding of culture, language, history, and business practices in China, because all of them are seeing their businesses closely linked to China, both as a customer and as part of their production processes. Alan Alley, now working for the governor's office, and Dave Chen, the chairman of the Oregon Innovation Council, are two of the strongest proponents of this. The college is advised by its board of advisors, which are CEOs from significant companies not only in the Willamette Valley, but also Seattle, San Francisco, Denver, who believe in what we're doing in the Lundquist College. We met in October to talk about the various future investment directions of the college, and they were given many options. And the vote out of the 12 attendees at this meeting was 11-1 that China was the most important investment for the College of Business at University of Oregon. And some of the other options were Portland and the existing programs in Eugene. So they really see China as a critical for the development of the economy of the state of Oregon. Let me give you one example of the kinds of things that we're doing within the college. And this is a program that the college did jointly with the Center for Asian Pacific Studies at the University of Oregon called Age in China. It's a grant that we got from the U.S. Department of Education to give faculty and business students an opportunity to get comfortable doing business with China. So last year we took 27 faculty and MBA students, put them through a series of seminars on history and culture of China provided by our outstanding East Asian Studies program. They did, then went through a series of seminars by existing business leaders who were working in China about the pitfalls and lessons learned from their experiences. Then we took them all to Beijing and Shanghai to study the Beijing Olympics. These were our sports management students as a business proposition, where they met with the organizing committee, toured the venues, the training facilities, worked with many of the companies that are involved in sponsorship. This next year we'll continue that program and add a program in innovation and supply chain for those students in our program. So this is one of many things that we're starting right now to engage China in our educational processes and deliver that human capital that we're seeing called for by the business leaders of the state. Thank you.
Steve?
Chairman Buckley and distinguished members of the committee, it's a great honor for me to be here. I appreciate this opportunity. The University of Oregon has a long and a very distinguished history in the study of China. We currently have faculty in such disciplines as language, literature, history, political science, geography, and art, many other fields specializing in China studies. Our faculty is committed both to serious research on China and to effective teaching. In fact, I think we teach something like 105 undergraduate courses every year with 100% East Asian content, and most of those in the area of China. 36% graduating
Chair.
Students.
Is that really?
Could I have just a little geography lesson? What else is in East Asia as opposed to Southeast Asia?
It would be Japan and Korea, largely.
China,
yeah,
that's right.
China,
thank
that's
you.
Right. Fully 36%.
I was missing that day.
36% of our graduating seniors in 2004-2005 had taken at least one East Asian core course. That is a course dealing with China, Japan, or Korea, most of them China. You know full well that China is a country with a long and a very fascinating history, an exceedingly rich and complex culture. Some knowledge of that history and culture, I think, is important for every American citizen. But it's particularly important for those who would do business in China or who are in the world of politics, education, and the field of tourism. Chinese are very proud of their history, as they should be, and if we want to engage them and engage them in a respectful and serious way, it's, of course, good to know something of that history, and we're very committed at the University of Oregon to do everything that we can to make sure that our students graduate with some knowledge of East Asia in general and China in particular. But I'm here to tell you that not all of the news is good. According to statistics from the Modern Language Association, which they gathered in 2002, they do this every 4 years, and we're all eager to see the statistics that will come out soon for the recent period. But in 2002, only 34,000 students in American colleges and universities were engaged in the study of Chinese. 20 times more students than that were studying Spanish. 6 times more students were studying French. 3 times more German, 2 times more Italian. That gives you some idea of how small we really are as a Chinese language teaching community in comparison with some of the other languages. At the University of Oregon, we currently enroll 161 students in either first or second year Chinese. By way of comparison, that's 161. By way of comparison, there are 1,065 students enrolled either in first or second year Spanish, 392 in French, 340 in Italian, and 238 in German. Considering the fact that Chinese is spoken by more people than any language in the world, you can see, I think, that there's something of a problem. Now, I'm not here to say that fewer students should be taking these other languages. Any language that a person studies, I think, is important. But it's fairly clear that more students need to take Chinese without a much yes.
I need to interrupt, sir, just for a second. Part of our protocol, I do need you to announce your name into the taping system. So I know you've been introduced, but if you could.
My name is Stephen Durant.
Thank you,
Stephen. And I'm the chair of East Asian Languages.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you. Please go ahead.
Chairman Butler. I appreciate that. We think that there's a problem with not as large a number as we would like students studying Chinese language. And we might ask ourselves in conclusion, what are the barriers? Well, I think that there are two barriers. One is structural and one is psychological. Most of the students who come to the university study the same language that they studied in high school. And a serious problem is that not many high schools teach Chinese. So the students who come to the university most often take those languages like Spanish and French that are taught commonly in the high schools. The psychological problem is, of course, that Chinese is perceived as an extremely difficult language. And I would not deny the difficulties of Chinese, but it's certainly no more difficult for a native Chinese speaker to learn English than for a native English speaker to learn Chinese. And there are hundreds of thousands of native, maybe millions of native Chinese speakers who have learned English just fine, such as my colleague sitting here. But, of course, Chinese is a language that is best started early. And if we can have more students starting Chinese at an earlier age and coming to the university already prepared with some level of proficiency, then, of course, we at the university can do much more with them. And we pledge to do all we can working with you to help the students of Oregon develop the kind of proficiency that they're going to need, the kind of cultural knowledge that they're going to need in order to prepare for a century that some have referred to as the China century, certainly a century in which China will play a critical role. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Carl Falsgraf. I'm the director of the Center for Applied Second Language Studies at the University of Oregon. Out of respect for our colleagues from Portland State and Oregon State, I'm going to cut my presentation short so that we can get them up here with their full amount of time. The full text of what I was going to say will be in the record and in your packets if you want to refer to it. I'm here to tell a good news story and get very concrete. I think my colleagues have very eloquently stated the need for Chinese in the current state and our capabilities at the university. I am the director of the flagship program, the Oregon flagship program. We receive over $1 million every year from the federal government to have children in Portland Public Schools start when they're in kindergarten. They receive half of their instruction every day in Chinese, half of their instruction in English. Part of this program is also for heritage speakers, people who have some kind of background at home in Chinese. We build on that ability that they have, make sure they maintain their language, and then give them the academic instruction in Chinese so that they're able to use it for professional purposes. What's really unique about this program, and as my colleague said, it's the only one in the United States, it gets students to a very high level of proficiency. By that I mean they can negotiate contracts, they can interpret, they can do research, they can write papers, they're going to have to write a thesis to get out of the University of Oregon when they're done in Chinese, doing their research on original Chinese materials. This is very different from our traditional approach to language, which has been, let's give everybody a little bit because it's good for you. And it is good for you. It's a wonderful experience. I think we've all known that, you know, learning something about another language and culture is very helpful. But to really engage with people in the economic sphere and the political sphere, you need a high level of language. Just a little bit isn't okay. Somebody like my colleague, Dr. Jung, can come here and do something as complex as testify before a committee because his ability in English is high enough to do that. We don't produce many students who have a high enough ability in Chinese to go before a provincial or state government panel in China and testify before them. That's the goal that we have in the flagship program. It's a concrete model for what I think we can do in other languages and put additional ones in Chinese. We're leading the nation on this. Almost every day I receive a phone call from somewhere else in the United States. We have visitors coming in on a regular basis. We're going to have people from all over the country coming in April and again in June to events that we have because these are so popular we have to bring them all at one time rather than one by one, or we wouldn't have time to do anything else. I would encourage you, again, to look in your packet. We have a lot of written material on this. And, again, my written testimony is in there, and encourage you to contact me personally if you're interested in more detailed information.
Mr. Chair, may I summarize what our panel?
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay. When we're talking about Chinese language, I assume we're talking about Mandarin. And
correct.
And if we are, what proportion of Chinese people speak Mandarin as opposed to other, either dialects or other languages?
Well, all Chinese, there's a compulsory education, that is the Putonghua. Everyone needs to learn that. But the dialects, in the depending where you go, people still speak that. But any official communication is in Putonghua.
Thank you.
I think from our panel, it sounds to me is that, again, this is not something we're just doing now. Where the university has a long history. Our vision is clear. Our mission is strategic. Our expertise is second to none. And our network is strong and wide. So in a Chinese way of summarizing this, we have the 天时地利人和, meaning the timing is right, our geographic location is correct, and the harmony of Oregonians is correct to make this happen. So we want to thank you again for your leadership and for your vision, and we are ready to do anything to get this going at the state. Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. We still have a few minutes within your time, and you all did a great job of adhering to that. Greatly appreciated. I did want to give our committee members a chance to ask any questions they might have concerning Representative Lim.
Thank you. As you see the name, the tree, double tree is my name, Lim.
Lim.
Never forget that, okay?
Double tree, yes.
So every the hotel in USA called the double tree, that belong to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a side story. And how many foreign language programs you have in your institution? That the I know you have a Chinese and Hispanic and also Japanese and German, but any other?
Yes, the languages that you can major in are basically the ones I've named plus Japanese. We do have a large number of languages of other languages that one can take on the first, second, and soon third year level. We've added Arabic to the curriculum, Korean. We are now teaching. We have a very small but interesting program in Swahili. Portuguese has recently been added to our curriculum. Of course, we teach the classical languages, Latin and Greek. Biblical Hebrew is taught. So those are the main. Russian. I didn't mention Russian. Russian is significantly smaller than Chinese in terms of enrollments, but they do have a major in Russian language.
Thank you very much. I just want to commend Dr. Zhang. You mentioned you've been here about 20 years.
In this country, yes.
In this country, and I've been here 40 years, and I envy you. He speaks English better than I do.
Thank you for the comment. That was my major, though.
Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a variety of questions, but the two that I'm really kind of wondering about. First of all, are the private universities also partnering with you, such as, Lewis and Clark, for example, has a terrific overseas program they have had for many, many years. And so I'd like to know about that. And then the other thing from a language standpoint, how close is the crossover? Because I can speak about this much Japanese, very little, but just probably enough to get myself in trouble in Japan. But how close is Mandarin and Japanese and Korean in terms of the languages and the crossover and that sort of thing? Because I know the other day, I won't editorialize. So just those two questions. Thank you.
We're actually working with Lewis and Clark to help us recruit students for our flagship program. My colleague, Amy Harder, the coordinator of that program, is going to Lewis and Clark. I believe it's 2 weeks from now. They have a sort of an N-Asian festival where they bring lots of high school kids. So we are partnering on a logistical basis with those folks. In terms of the relationships between the languages, Japanese and Korean are historically very closely related. The grammar is very close. Chinese is different linguistically from both of those
in
its
correct.
Structure. The characters, however, are fairly common. I'm a Japanese speaker myself. When I go to China, I can sort of figure out what's going on. Of course, I can't speak at all because the spoken languages are unrelated, but the characters are similar.
I would only add that I'm in the opposite position, and when I go to Japan, I sort of read my way around with the characters, but of course I don't speak Japanese.
Okay.
Now, there have been a large number of loan words that have come into Japanese from Chinese. So if you know a few words of Japanese, some of them might be fairly close to some Chinese words.
But both Japanese and Korean use the Chinese character in Japanese will be kanji.
Yeah.
So the kanji, the some of the pronunciation is the same and the meaning is the same. When it gets trickier, when Japanese use the original Chinese characters to mean something very different in their own language. For instance, shouzhi is in Chinese is toilet paper, but in Japanese the same two character meaning letters. So when you learn a different language, you say, wow, wait a minute,
be careful,
this doesn't make sense here. But then the other things is Chinese word da zhang fu, those who speak Chinese, da zhang fu meaning big chauvinism. But in Japan, the same three character is daijoubu, meaning it's okay. Well, if you think about it's really the culture, because women's status in society in Japan is very different. I don't know. If you learn the basic Chinese characters, you can communicate by writing among the Chinese, the Koreans, and the Japanese.
Very good. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We greatly appreciate your expertise, your time, your passion for this, and it's infusing into us, so thank
you
very much.
Can I ask just one question before they leave?
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I have one question about whether or not there's been any attempt in your developing relationships with China and University of Oregon to involve the Fujian province, which is Oregon's sister state province since 1984.
Mr. Chair and also Representative Richardson, I know that this is a sister relationship. Again, this is only my 8 month on the job, and I think we have full intention to build on old relationships, especially sister relationships or between the provinces and cities. Xiamen University is a famous university in the southern part of China, and they have wonderful programs. So we intend to look into that possibility.
Mr. Chair, I might say that part of the reason that we have a little bit of difficulty with American students is the fear factor.
Mm-hmm.
I had the opportunity to go to China and take with me one of my daughters, who is a college student, and we were with some dignitaries in Xiamen, and one of the dignitaries from the government there was talking with Laura, my daughter, and asking her about where she went to school and so forth, and she told it, and he said, I can see that your daughter will get a full scholarship to come to Xiamen University. I said, no, thank you. It terrorized her. But it was too bad, because it would have been a great experience for her.
Yes.
But anyway, we would certainly promote all that we could to have the strengthening of this. The sister-state relationship is taken very seriously in China, sometimes more so than it has been here in the past, but we're trying to change that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
And as Dr. Zhang mentioned, that the foreign languages should be learned when they were young.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to emphasize our children learn when they were young, even 1 year old. That's the time to begin. When you learn after 20 years old, it's not going to happen. It's very difficult to happen.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thank
very
you.
Much. If I could have the group from Portland State come up.
Hey, Mr. Chair, let me know that also Washington County has a sister city relationship with an area in China. My guess is there are probably others that you really need to maybe get cataloged in a sense. See what they are.
Also interesting while they're coming up that in Medford there's a private school called St. Mary's, and they have made arrangements for a Chinese professor to come and live in Medford and teach Chinese. And they have, I don't know the student body, it's a few hundred.
Right.
They have 63 students taking Chinese in St. Mary's.
Oh, very good.
Very excited about it.
Oh, very good. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Mel Gertov. I'm a professor of political science and international studies at Portland State in the Hatfield School of Government, and it's a delight and a privilege for us to speak to you today, as all our colleagues are going to in the other institutions, on the importance of China. I'd like to begin by introducing my two colleagues. On my right is Professor Marsha Fisher, who is Assistant Dean in the College of Engineering and Computer Science and is also manager of its international education program. And on my left is Professor Patricia Wetzel, who is Professor of Japanese Language and also Director of our Institute for Asian Studies. I was actually inspired by the presentations that just preceded from our wonderful colleagues at the U of O. I have a prepared, very brief statement that's in the package that you have on why it's important for us in Oregon to be so fixed on China, and particularly from our point of view, stressing the human resources issue. But I'd like to depart just for a moment to say that to speak about my own personal involvement in some of the programs that we have at PSU, because they do speak directly to the question of why language learning is really the gateway to being effective in dealing with China. I personally have had 5 formal years of Chinese language training. And that was at a time when U.S.-China relations, I'm almost afraid to have to say this, but well before U.S.-China relations were formalized. At PSU, I'm personally involved in 2 programs, which really are each in its own way quite important to China as well as to Oregon. One of them, which is described in a separate sheet in your package, is a sustainable land use program, which was started in the year 2000 at the joint initiative of the Chinese side and PSU, and which each year since has invited 2 or 3 separate delegations of 30 to 40 officials from China concerned at different levels of the Chinese government with one of the most sensitive and potentially politically and economically explosive issues in China today, which is effective and lawful management of land resources. It's an issue that has led to some of the rural violence that you read about from time to time in China. It's an issue that has been very detrimental to individual farmers who have had their land illegally confiscated to make way for all kinds of private and as well as public enterprises that would seem to earn the government locally, especially, more money. And so the opportunity to train people is one of the most important things that we can be doing. Train them not just in sustainable land management, which is something that Oregon is especially well equipped to provide, but in indirectly, really, to train people in law-abiding behavior. Because the corruption, when it comes to this issue at the local level, is extraordinary. And so we can make, in a way, a small but direct contribution in a number of different ways to how the Chinese deal with that very explosive question. It's an environmental issue, but it's also a political one, as you can see. My own part in it, I'm not a specialist on the environment. I'm a political scientist. But every year I talk to these folks about something else that they're interested in, which is government, American government, and how it works, and sometimes, frankly, how it doesn't work. But the real message here is that I talk to them in Chinese. And I can't stress enough what it means when I come in to them and to me, frankly, when I come into the room and I open my mouth and speak to them in their language. Suddenly, a lot of barriers come down. It's like they're welcoming one of their own. And we can have an exchange in a very different way than if somebody comes in and in English with an interpreter speaks one way to them. It's just a wonderful opportunity, and it builds friendships and trust as no other tool that I can think of can. The other kind of experience is very different. I'm involved in a course in a very unique program that we have in the PSU Business School. It's a Master's in International Management program. It's within the scope of one full year. Students can earn a master's degree, and the program culminates in a trip to Japan and China for meetings with business and other leaders. And there I give a course, nothing very unusual about that, I suppose. But the student body for that particular program, which I might add runs on a whole different calendar from the rest of the university, is approximately half international students, including, of course, people from various Chinese-speaking portions of East Asia, not just the PRC, but also Taiwan, Singapore, and so forth. But there again, we're making a contribution because we do what we do best, which is training. But in the course of training, also imparting a sense of the importance of cross-cultural sensitivity. It's mutual learning that goes on. And that is the sort of thing that, to me, represents what engaging China, as opposed to what, unfortunately, I think some people are involved in, is confronting China or containing China, is all about. So in the end, I'll simply say that, as I do at the end of this piece, what I think we need to be doing is, yes, focusing on studying China. But I would add one very important thing, which I think came out at the end in the previous presentations. Studying China and studying the Chinese language is still a bit of a world apart from proficiency. Mm-hmm. Proficiency. 2 years and even three will not get you to where we would all like people to get, to be proficient. To be able, as someone said earlier, to carry on a professional dialogue, whether it concerns business or the environment or engineering, with their Chinese counterparts in Chinese. That's where we really need to aim. And that's why, as Representative Lim and others have been saying, you need to start early, because it takes a while to get to that point. Thank you very much. And now I'd like to turn it over to Dean Fisher.
Thank you. Chairman Buckley, representatives of the House on this committee, my name is Marcia Fisher. I am Assistant Dean in the Massey College of Engineering and Computer Science at Portland State University. And as has been mentioned, I am manager of the International Education Programs in Massey College. I'd like to change gears a little bit in my comments from some of the discussions that have gone on so far, both here and also from our colleagues at U of O, and talk about our activities in the field of engineering and computer science that have existed for some time, and some of our new ones as well. And I do have the written testimony in your packet, and also some of the programs that I'll be referring to are in the indicated in the Internationalization Initiative pamphlets, which you have in front of you. It will be no surprise to you that the fields of engineering and computer science, for many years, graduate students primarily from China have been coming to the United States, including to PSU, to pursue advanced degrees. This is an important activity for globalization, global technology, the emerging global community, and is one that we remain committed to at Portland State. We're happy to report that applications from promising graduate students in China are increasing in our college, and this is something that we appreciate very much. Also, you will not be surprised to know that in fields like engineering, many PSU faculty have been engaged in research activities for some time. One I'd like to point out that was very recent was we were honored that Dr. Bryant York of PSU's Computer Science Department was selected as the delegate to the U.S.-China Computer Science Summit, which was recently held in Beijing. Our research activities in Sichuan province are outlined in the booklet in front of you, and many engineering faculty have research partnerships which benefit both the partners in China as well as PSU and the state of Oregon in terms of research productivity, finding new avenues for using engineering in our world today. However, today I'd like to tell you a little bit about our international education program in China. We have two that I've outlined in my comments. First, a small one that is just starting in the field of computer science. We have a partnership with Suzhou University, which is a university in Portland's sister city of Suzhou. There we will be working with them to bring over approximately 10 students a year who are admitted master's students at Suzhou University to our computer science department for 1 year of study. This is an exchange program where the students will have been studying their master's program at Suzhou for some time and come here to PSU to do study for an additional full year and still have to return to China for more master's study. So we can see that the master's program in computer science in China, at least at Suzhou University, is longer than ours. But through this exchange program, the students will put in a full year of study at PSU. The two faculties have been working very hard to coordinate and articulate the curriculum, and we expect this program will begin this fall. However, our largest program is an undergraduate program in engineering and computer science that we do operate in Shanghai, in the Pudong area of Shanghai, which, of course, is a very vibrant business area in all of China. This is a program in partnership with a private institution called International Institute for Information Technology and Education, or IIIST, that came out of Fudan University, famous university in Shanghai. And we have been partnering with them since 2002. Through this program, PSU delivers undergraduate computer science and engineering education in Shanghai using distance education technology. Faculty travel back and forth, and in partnership with Chinese faculty, primarily from Fudan, but also from some other leading institutions in Shanghai, such as an institution which was already mentioned, Shanghai Jia Tong University. We've had approximately 100 students go through this program to date. We've also had students from PSU travel to Shanghai, to IIIST campus, and participate in internships in American and other multinational companies, as well as study Chinese language and culture. So we're very pleased with the progress of this initiative to date. And I'd like to point out that since we have been active in this particular partnership, one thing that we've seen is that people have seen that this partnership has been successful in certain key elements, producing graduates. These graduates of this program have been successful in obtaining high-tech employment in the Shanghai region and have also been successful in landing positions in graduate schools around the world, really, including at Portland State, but also they've obtained entry into graduate programs at other computer science and engineering programs worldwide. So as this has happened, we find that additional partners in China are interested in this program, and it's opening additional doors for us to develop international education partnerships that we hope we will have the opportunity to pursue at a later time. But it's a very exciting time to be involved on the education side in China as well as in working with China here in the United States and welcoming students here. We hope to encourage more articulation of students back and forth between our two countries. Thank you.
Thank you. Professor Wetzel.
Chairman Buckley and members of the committee, my name is Patricia Wetzel, and I think it was mentioned I'm on the Japanese faculty in the Department of Foreign Languages at Portland State.
and I'm also the director of the Institute for Asian Studies. So if you have some questions about language, I could also field those, but I wanted to talk today to you about a new initiative on our campus, which is in your packet on this little Curl-colored piece of paper, and that's our Confucius Institute. Before I go on, I would like to mention that I started studying Japanese at the age of 25. So I agree with my colleagues that it is very important to start people learning language at a young age, but it is never too late to study a foreign language.
Can I ask a question on
that? Representative Greenlee.
Had you studied other foreign languages
I
at
have.
A younger age?
I have, yeah. I did a lot of Spanish, and I did comparative linguistics at Penn State, and so I had done Lithuanian and Sanskrit and a little bit of Latin, and Japanese was a pleasure after that.
So the answer is it would be easy for somebody to start Japanese at 25 as long as they know Sanskrit.
In principle, the more foreign languages you know, the easier it is to learn a new one, I think, is what it means. And I like languages. So I'd like to tell you about the Confucius Institute that we're starting at Portland State, and I've given you a little bit of information here about the Confucius Institutes. In January, Portland State signed a memorandum of understanding with the Chinese government to start a Confucius Institute, which is an umbrella term for a non-profit public entity that aims to promote Chinese language and culture and support local Chinese teaching internationally through affiliated Confucius Institutes, these institutes. The headquarters for the Confucius Institutes are in Beijing, and they are housed under what is called the Hanban, which is the China National Office for Teaching Language as a Foreign Language, Chinese as a Foreign Language. It's said to be comparable to entities like the Alliance Française or the Goethe Institute or the British Council. I don't know if you're familiar with these, but as my colleague once stated, we sense that this is China's effort to put their footprint on education about China outside of China. The Ministry of Education in China estimates that by the year 2010, there will be about 100 million people worldwide learning Chinese as a foreign language. And so it plans to set up 100 Confucius Institutes worldwide. After establishing a pilot institute in Uzbekistan, which is where they started the first one in the year 2004, they opened the first Confucius Institute officially in November of 2004 in Seoul, Korea. And many more have been established in other countries in Asia, Australia, Canada, Europe, and the United States. Currently in the United States, as I understand it, there are over 30 Confucius Institutes, the Chicago Public Schools, the China Institute in New York City, Michigan State, San Francisco State, but I believe that we are the second Confucius Institute on the West Coast after San Francisco State. Each Confucius Institute is encouraged to state its own mission, to create its own mission. So, for example, San Francisco State has elected to create a credential in Chinese teaching. The University of Maryland has been doing a lot of courses on language and culture for business and travel and that sort of thing. Before I tell you about PSU's mission, I wanted to talk a little bit about the context within in Portland and in the state of Oregon within which we're creating our Confucius Institute. So I have some statistics there for how many people speak Chinese, too, a little chart for Chinese being the most spoken language on the globe, followed by Hindi, Spanish, English, and Arabic. And I don't think we should forget any of those languages in the larger context of language education. In the national context, according to the most recent census, Spanish is by far the most common language after English spoken in the United States. And that's followed by German, Vietnamese, Russian, and Chinese, lagging far behind Spanish, of course. But these distributions are far from static. Between 1980 and 1990, the number of Spanish speakers in the United States grew by 50%. Over the same period of time, the number of Chinese speakers grew by 98%. Today, approximately 2.4 million Chinese speakers live in the United States, and more than 4 out of 5 of them prefer to speak Chinese at home. In the Oregon context, there are about 38 387,000 speakers of other languages in the state. That's 12% of our population. The top five languages in terms of sheer numbers are Spanish, German, Vietnamese, Russian, and Chinese. The highest concentrations of these, of course, are in the metropolitan areas and in the counties of Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas, which is, where Portland State is located. In the PSU context, we also have high numbers of international students. We had, in 1993, 103 Chinese nationals on our campus. Last year, in the year 2006, we had 179 Chinese nationals on our campus. And we can also count the 192 students that we're teaching in Shanghai. In terms of Chinese language study, PSU effectively teaches over 150 people a year in its first year Chinese language classes. Attrition in languages like Chinese, Japanese, Arabic, and Korean is, attrition meaning the number of people who drop, is about the same, and that's about 60% over the course of a year. We call these the hard languages. Not to dismiss how difficult it can be to learn Spanish or French or anything like that, but it takes a long time to get fluent in these languages because there is nothing to help you on the landscape, culturally, linguistically, or otherwise. We also teach Chinese language in the Masters of International Management that Professor Gertoff mentioned a few minutes ago. We have Chinese expertise around the campus in anthropology, art history, history, international studies, political science. And as of this past term, we had 50 majors and minors in international studies in which students are required to take 3 years of a foreign language, which is a very robust language requirement for an academic program. There are opportunities for students to study abroad in China, as well as internship programs in Beijing, Shanghai, and in our sister city of Suzhou. And we're very hopeful about expanding our relationship with Suzhou because they're going to be our partner institution in our Confucius Institute. What we don't do very well yet is get our own students abroad. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that we have to do better and give students more possibilities to make that happen. That's one of our priorities in our international initiative. The resources for the Confucius Institute are earmarked for events, for short courses on China, Chinese language and culture, and library materials, and we will be hosting a faculty member from our sister institution in Suzhou every year. So the Chinese government makes it possible for us to host a Chinese faculty member every year. The goals for the Confucius Institute are to educate about China for PSU students as well as for people in the metropolitan region. A lot of this can be with China on our doorstep. We very often talk about study abroad in our own backyard, so study abroad even in the state of Oregon. We would like to expand our exchange relationships with China, and I mentioned that we would like to expand our relationship with the University of Suzhou and with our sister city. We would like to liaison with China communities on our doorstep, and I've listed some of just a few of those that are in the Portland region there for you. And we would like to expand our outreach to K-12, and we will be cooperating with the University of Oregon in a couple of events, I hope, through the flagship program and creating some synergies with them on that front. So I thank you for your time. If you have questions.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, Representative Lim.
Thank you, the Chair. When the Chinese student coming to your institution, do they pay a full tuition fee, or under the exchange program do they pay a small amount? And
for the most part, students, I think I can answer this. For the most part, students are paying out-of-state tuition. We have a couple of programs for just a small number of students. If it's a direct exchange, so if it's a student-for-student exchange, we can have the students pay PSU tuition and go abroad. But that's a special agreement with the universities, and it's a one-to-one match.
Okay. My concern is make sure the state fund going to the students of our own instead of,
right.
Of course, it's good to help other students coming to this country, but it goes to our own student first.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you very much. I notice there's not much discussion about health and biology in programs here, and I know OHSU has a variety of programs linking to China, including a large number of Chinese students at the university. I wonder, have there been any barriers working out that kind of relationship between OHSU and PSU in this area?
No barriers.
I'm afraid none of us represent the biological sciences, so we probably can't speak to that directly, but I don't believe that I'm personally in engineering, I'm not aware of any barriers that exist between working between PSU and OHSU. We do collaborate with them in several projects related to bioengineering, and there seems to be good exchange.
Yeah, and because I'm in Japanese, I know about some of the Japanese exchange relationships at OHSU. We don't do anything with their students, but I do know that our Office of International Programs takes care of housing and orientation for them. So there's that doorway, but other than that, we don't have anything.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, the Vice Provost for International Affairs for PSU was scheduled to come, and unfortunately he couldn't make it due to health reasons. So there might be some of those questions we could answer later through email, Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Richardson.
Ms. Chair and Ms. Wetzel, mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your presentation. Has there been a lessening of the difficulty in getting visas for Chinese students to come? I mean, that's been a huge problem in the past, and we've met with the representatives of the U.S. government in both Beijing and Guangzhou, to talk to them about how we can help facilitate that. But it's been a problem. Are you getting
to my through? Knowledge, it's not gotten any better. To my knowledge, it's not gotten any better.
So I second that.
I would concur with that.
Just one more. If information I'd like to have, which is the largest foreign student populations in the PSU? Are they Japanese, Korean, or?
Japanese is the largest with 228.
Okay.
India is second with 219, although those are a little bit skewed because those are overwhelmingly graduate students. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the interesting things about the India population at PSU. And we have 165 students from Saudi Arabia,
okay.
149 from Korea, and China with 94.
Okay. Thank you. That helps. Very good.
Mr. Yes. Chairman, just make one comment in response to Representative Greenlick's question. It's not. It leads to something which I think is very important. As you listen to the three campuses testifying, each of us has wonderful programs. and yet I think all my colleagues in the China field would agree that one of the problems that always arises, and especially in our rather small state, is that we have terrific resources, but often there's a lack of synergy that tries to maximize what we have. And I know that the will is there to cooperate, and we do cooperate in a number of areas, although we weren't able to answer your particular question, but it does beg the issue. And I personally believe that to get serious in an effort like this, on our side, we need to do a better job of cooperating with one another to make the maximum use of what we have.
Mr. Chair,
there was an agreement.
Yeah, I'm interested in testing the hypothesis that the barriers between OHSU and PSU might be brought down if they became the same institution. So I really am interested. I mean, because one of the key issues in trying to get inter-university collaboration does come to things like promotion and tenure, resource allocation, and a variety of things like that. So I was just interested in the extent to which you even knew about things that were going on in OHSU in their relationship with China, and how that might be promoted in 20 years from now by having a different institutional structure. But I just wanted to ask the question. I didn't expect you to know the answer.
Thank you so much for being here, and thank you.
Thank you.
Great luck with the programs you're doing, and Godspeed on that work.
Appreciate it.
If we could have the panel from Oregon State University come up. Welcome.
Chairman Bucky and committee members, thank you for letting us present today. My name is Joe Hoff, and I'm the interim director of the International Education and Outreach Office at Oregon State University, which works with study abroad programs and also our internationalization efforts. And I'd like to begin by introducing my colleagues, Professor David Hanaway in the Crop and Soil Department in the College of Agricultural Sciences. To his right is Professor Chris Bell, who's also Associate Dean of the College of Engineering, and then Professor Wai-Yu Lee, who is a Professor of Political Science in the College of Liberal Arts. So many things have been said already. I'll try to keep this short. I also wish to approach this also from an internationalization perspective to some extent, again, addressing the issue of Oregon as a whole. But OSU has had a long engagement with Chinese universities going back more than 30 years with an agreement between OSU and National Ocean University, and more than 25 years with China Agricultural University and Nanjing Agricultural University. And as you know, we are a land grant, sea grant, space grant, and sun grant university, so we focus more on many of the practical aspects of working together. One of the projects that has come out of this arrangement with working with China is the Visualizing China's Future Agriculture Project that Professor David Hanaway will expand upon in his presentation. But this project has helped market Oregon's grass seed in China with a lot of economic collaboration on that front. And as a land-grant university, the mission extends beyond the borders of our state. Our President Ray has said, making a difference in people's, the mission of OSU is making a difference in people's lives, serving the citizens of Oregon, the nation, and the world. And so we've had a long and extensive relationship with China and Chinese universities. If you look at the handout that was given you with the OSU logo on it, the orange, it summarizes the extent of our international education activities with China. We have sent, in the last 5 years, 57 study abroad students to China. We have an average of 50 to 60 visiting scholars per year, and around 135 to 140 incoming Chinese students to OSU who are mainly involved in our colleges of science and engineering. And we have more than 30 current OSU faculty members who were born in China. While we do not offer a major in Chinese, Mandarin language, we do offer a minor, which consists of 18 credits, the third year level of Chinese Mandarin language study. There are currently 15 to 20 minors each year, and approximately 250 to 360 students per year enroll in Chinese language courses throughout the three terms. I agree with Dr. Zhang that this is quite an imbalance, and that we have meant much to go in terms of trying to change that imbalance. Our study abroad programs currently consist of the City U of Hong Kong study abroad program with our College of Business students, and we cooperate with the Oregon University System study abroad programs at the Chinese University of Nationalities in Beijing. And we hope to establish further study abroad opportunities for our students in the future. In August of 2006, OSU President Ed Ray, accompanied by deans and faculty members, signed official MOUs with six universities and research organizations in China as part of a larger Asia initiative. Our Asia initiative extends beyond China to include Korea, South Korea, Japan, India, and Thailand, and other nations in Asia. The purpose of the trip in the Asia initiative is to better understand the historical, current, and potential future involvement of OSU faculty and students in China and other Asian nations, and to identify suitable partners in Oregon and Asia to pursue mutually beneficial projects and programs. And the six MOUs are listed on the handout that I've given you. The need for further collaboration and cooperation between OSU's faculty and students with Chinese institutions and citizens is evident as we enter this global age. Increased understanding of our cultures will help prevent misunderstandings and establish new and continued long-lasting friendships and encourage peace between our peoples. Issues that OSU deals with on a regular basis, such as natural resource management, reducing pollution, developing alternative energy sources, and ensuring adequate supplies of healthful foods, will require cooperation and collaboration amongst researchers and governments to find solutions. Mutual cooperation has great potential to spur economic development in both societies. As author Thomas Friedman has stated, the world is now flat, and the U.S. is no longer at the top, and we need, therefore, to collaborate with our neighbors on these different problems and issues in our societies. The challenge is to prepare Oregonians and our higher ed institutions to engage fully with China and other nations in this new global era. As a first-generation college student who had the opportunity to study abroad in college in Spain and later to teach English in Japan for 4 years, I personally realized the importance of having a fish-out-of-water experience to help me realize that not everyone has the same worldview or does everything the same way I do. My experiences overseas helped me gain a greater sensitivity and interest in other cultures, as well as a better understanding of my own country, the USA. I was lucky in having mentors who encouraged me to seek out international experiences, but I believe that we need more mentors, more support in our higher ed institutions to encourage students to do this and to encourage our faculty to engage overseas. Unless international becomes more integrated into our higher ed institutions in all aspects, including research collaboration, our students will not understand the need for engagement globally. Faculty must lead the way by being engaged with their counterparts overseas. There must be more support and integration of education abroad opportunities with the curriculum of our different institutions so that students may graduate on time without going further into debt. If you're an engineering student, there's very little time to study Chinese language, and so we must make better opportunities for students to take advantage of all the opportunities at our institutions. And we must truly appreciate the role our international students and alumni play in providing Oregon with new knowledge and diversity, as well as connections overseas. And finally, it would benefit Oregon, I believe, to develop its own comprehensive international education policy, as many other states have done to promote the internationalization of higher education and K-12 education statewide. Our neighbor to the north, Washington State, has developed such an international education policy. So OSU wishes to align, as others have said, I think Mel Goertz has said, to align with the economic development efforts and other interests of the state of Oregon. It's an honor to present on behalf of OSU in terms of our collaboration with China. And as Mel Goertz said, I hope this is the beginning of a collaborative effort. So now I turn the presentation over to my colleague, David Hennaway.
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is David Hannaway. I am a professor in the Department of Crop and Soil Science at Oregon State University. My primary responsibilities are in the area of forage crops, alfalfa, cool season grasses and legumes that are grown for pasture, hay, and silage. So international programs is a part of what I do, but not normally a day-to-day kind of activity. But involvement for me related to China began in 1982, and it continues through the present with various college-wide, university-wide kinds of initiatives. In addition to the professional activities related to international and China, I'd like to share with you the fact that these activities hold a special personal family significance for me. My great uncle, Edward Hume, was a medical missionary in China in the early 1900s, as part of the Yale in China and the Johns Hopkins University program, and he and others were responsible for establishing the still-functioning Xingya Hospital in Changsha, Hunan Province. Oregon's grass seed industry leads the world, producing two-thirds of the cool-season grasses and the world supply. These grasses are used for forage and livestock systems, for soil conservation, and for beautification in terms of athletic fields and lawns, residential and commercial. Grass seed consistently ranks in the top five of Oregon's agricultural commodities. In this past year, 2006, the value was $450 million. This grass seed is marketed globally. to various markets around the world. And it was the Oregon grass seed industry's goal to expand their markets around the world that resulted in my activities related to China for the past 12 years or so. The Oregon grass seed marketing effort involved faculty from several OSU departments and from the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and was led by the Oregon Seed Council. They had a 10-year program funded by the USDA market access program, and beginning in 1992, this has now resulted in greatly increased grass seed sales to China. From essentially no seed sales at the inception of the program, those seed sales have grown to approximately 15 to 16 million pounds per year, and the last 2 years have topped $9 million in value. This project involved applied research in field trials and also demonstration trials and educational programs in many provinces throughout the country. It provided the opportunity also for several high-profile events, including visits of Oregon Governors John Kitzhaber and Ted Kulongowski, and our former OSU President Paul Risser. Complementary to the Oregon Seed Council-led project were several grants that have come directly to Oregon State University, including a large project using web-based spatial mapping data to identify optimal suitability zones for the grasses that we grow in Oregon and market to China. Projects included those geospatial maps of the products of those grants included the geospatial maps of climate, soil, and species suitability. And we have put together a number of these maps in the atlas that was referred to related. We affectionately call it the China Map Atlas, and I'd be happy to share that with you if there's time afterwards. Thus, the past China cooperative projects have resulted in increased agricultural exports through the use of traditional agronomic field trials, but also the use of advanced computer technologies that we have worked on in developing these maps. In the process, excellent relationships have been built with scientists, research agency administrators, and commercial company representatives in China. Oregon is now recognized as the preferred source for agricultural products and high-quality research and education programs delivered through OSU. 2008 promises to be an exceptionally important year for Oregon grasses with two activities. One is a joint International Grasslands and Rangelands Congress to be held in Inner Mongolia in Hohhot. And the other is the Summer Olympics to be held in Beijing and surrounding venues. Both events will showcase Oregon grasses for livestock feed, for soil conservation, and the visual image that I'd like to leave with you as a platform for Olympic athletes from around the world. It's a nice thought to think of athletes performing on Oregon grass. So in summary, it's my privilege to have been involved with many cooperative projects over the past 25 years. These projects have led to scientific and commercial products that I believe have benefited our university and the state's economy. And in addition, we have developed enduring friendships and working relationships that have been a source of great personal satisfaction, and I hope of some benefit to the broader goal of improved U.S.-China relations. Our work has demonstrated how international research funded by outside sources of funding can provide benefits to Oregon industries, to our farmers, and to our ranchers. Collaboration with Chinese scientists has also led to improved interrelationships of interdepartmental, intercollege, and interinstitution-based approaches to the multidisciplinary work. It's my sincere hope that we will be able to aggressively pursue a number of high-priority projects now awaiting our attention. Thank you for the privilege of presenting to you today.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Chair Buckley, members of the committee, my name is Chris Bell. I'm an associate dean in the College of Engineering and a professor of civil engineering. One of my responsibilities is to lead new international initiatives in my college, and I also participate in university-wide initiatives. We too have been encouraged by our advisory board to provide students and faculty with opportunities that will help them compete globally in the global marketplace and therefore help Oregon economic development. Because most of our engineering students and faculty are unlikely to participate in language and cultural exchanges, we are focusing on opportunities connected with research and student projects. Students and faculty participating in such opportunities will learn a great deal about the Chinese, their language, and their culture, and they will learn how engineering is done in China. The College of Engineering has a long history of welcoming Chinese students to study at OSU. It dates back to before the 1950s. And we've significant numbers of Chinese faculty for many years. Among current faculty, 10 are from mainland China, including 3 women, and 4 of them received bachelor's degrees from Tsinghua University in Beijing, regarded as the best engineering school in China. Professor Chao Wu in our nuclear engineering program is one of these, and Tsinghua has named him one of their distinguished graduates. They've tried to get him to go back, and thankfully he has stayed with us. But the result of that relationship is that last August, President Ray signed a memorandum of understanding at Tsinghua when he led the delegation to China. We are directing most of our efforts currently at Tsinghua University, focusing on what they do well and what we want to work with them on. It's a very large engineering school and is often referred to as the MIT of China. It's also of interest that President Hu Jintao is one of their famous graduates, and I'm proud to say he's a civil engineer. Many U.S. companies have forged relationships with Tsinghua as they develop their presence in China. This includes Intel, Tektronix, HP, and Boeing. Many of those companies, or all of those companies, have representatives on our advisory board, and they are pushing us to develop what they are doing in China with our interests so that we can work together with them. I'd now like to focus on the activities of 2 of our electrical engineering faculty who are working with their counterparts at Tsinghua on design of circuits and related semiconductor issues. One of these faculty is a brand new assistant professor, Patrick Chang, a Chinese American with a PhD from Stanford that he received last June. He has a goal to create a globally aware research teaching environment, thereby creating future leaders. Patrick spent last summer at Tsinghua and visited again in the fall. He has recruited one of their students to join his fledgling research team. He and his Tsinghua collaborators hold weekly internet meetings using Skype. Together with Professor Huaping Liu, whose recently graduated PhD student is now on the faculty at Tsinghua, he is expanding the collaborative efforts and just recently met with representatives from Intel's Communication Technology Labs here in Hillsborough to explore how they can partner in this collaboration with Tsinghua. Intel already is collaborating with Tsinghua. The director and general manager of this Intel group, Alan Crouch, is an OSU computer science graduate and previously established Intel research in Beijing. Dr. Liu will be visiting Tsinghua and Intel Beijing in March. So we have a lot of things boiling there at Tsinghua. In the future, we'll expand programs like this to include other engineering programs at Tsinghua. I haven't told you about all of our Tsinghua graduates. And where possible, we'll be working with industry partners. In addition to visits by faculty and recruiting talented graduate students, we will be encouraging short-term exchanges for students who will collaborate on research projects. This is a model that works well for undergraduate as well as graduate students. It does not require American students to be fluent in Chinese, but it puts them in an environment where they will work closely with Chinese students and inevitably learn more about the Chinese, their language and their culture. We'll also work with other Chinese universities to establish similar relationships focusing on our strengths, particularly in sustainable technologies that will address issues like clean energy, water, and environmental concerns. So in summary, OSU Engineering is committed to working with our colleagues across campus and in the state of Oregon to create opportunities in China. Our goal is to contribute to the economic development of our state and enable our graduates to be leaders in the global marketplace. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and the members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee. Since I'm the last speaker of this whole program, I think I will just go brief and tell you what's going on with the College of Liberal Arts at Oregon State University. And my name is Huayu Li, and I'm an associate professor of political science. So for a long time, COA, also known as the College of Liberal Arts, has long history with dealing with China. Our scholars have been working with China on publications, research, international conferences, and also cultural exchanges. For example, we have an anthropologist who is now working with Chinese scholars on this Three Gorges Dam and evaluating its impact on environment along Yangtze River. We also have a professor in music who has led Oregon musicians to perform in China, Henan province, for many times. And he has won so many hearts there. And last year, he received a Governor's Yellow River Award for his contribution to this exchange between Henan province and Oregon. So we also have a history department now establishing a new lecture series focusing on Greater China. And I myself is organizing an international conference to inviting Chinese scholars to come here to speak about Sino-Soviet relations. So we also, aside from scholars, we have very engaged students who are interested in China. We have an ROTC student who has been studying Chinese language because he wants to be a military attaché in American Beijing embassy someday. Okay. We have a student who has gone to Columbia University to study East Asian language and culture because he wants to have a career to deal with China. We have a student who has gone to UW because she wants to study Uyghur language there so someday she can study more about Uyghur medicine. So she can bring that kind of medicine to the United States. I also have a student who is doing a international degree thesis working with Chinese scholars on rural conservations. And his goal is to have a career working for an NGO dealing with China's environment. So we have a group of students who are interested in China, and they're all coming from small towns of Oregon. They're not from Portland, not from Salem, but they're from rural Oregon. And they're determined to have a career dealing with China. So we have a vibrant community at Oregon State in the College of Liberal Arts. Scholars are working very hard to engage China, and students are eager to learn more about China. Mr. Chairman, but we can do better. We certainly can do better as scholars. We can do more projects engaging Chinese scholars, and as educators, we can teach our students more about China so that they can better prepared for this globalizing economy. So I'm asking if all possible, we should have more courses, like many colleges colleagues have been talking here, to teach our students Chinese language and give them the tools to do so. And another point I want to make here is that when we teach our students about China, this is from political scientist's point of view, is that China shouldn't be taught as primarily a threat to the United States or competitor to the United States. Instead, we should recognize China as opportunity for all of us, for the United States, for Oregon, and for Oregon higher education. And I think we need your help to do better. And that's all I want to say today. I just want to keep it short.
Thank you very much. Yes. Gentlemen, any questions? Ms. Penn? Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to let you know that Dr. Hanaway is modest in the effect that he's had in China. We had the opportunity to go to Inner Mongolia, which is not on the beaten path, and they're saying, oh, Dr. Hanaway, you know him. And it so happened that not too long after that trip, he conducted a training session with groups of people and scientists and farmers and agricultural leaders from all over China that came. I think it was in Hohhot. And I understand that the weather wasn't cooperative, that people almost got snowed in or did get snowed in. It was that the weather is severe there in the winter, but it was very well received. And we had a group that went with a man named Henry Liao, who was for a time working with Oregon, and we're in attendance there. Anyway, the work that's being done not only in promoting Oregon grass seed, but also helping Chinese agriculture to develop greater productivity is crucial. And when we were there, they took us to one of their processing farms, and it's a very interesting situation there. You know, we have granges where farmers get together in a kind of co-op. Well, there you have huge dairy companies from the top down that will go and contact farmers, and they'll say, we built a new facility with a state-of-the-art milking facility and paddocks of maybe 5 acres or so, and we will arrange for you to pay over time and buy 25 cows, dairy cows, instead of the one that you're using just to get by.
Right.
And you can live in a little house on this paddock so long as you'll use our facility to do your milking. And if you do real well, then we'll arrange for you to get another 25 cows. And so they're taking people that have no hope of breaking out of abject poverty and giving them a chance to have their children get education, to get a television set, to have cattle that they carry cattle that they wouldn't have otherwise. And when we were there, the silage that they were feeding their cows on was just leftover stalks. And it was corn stalks after everything of nutrition had been taken away from it. And as a result, their production was like 8,800 pounds of milk products a year. And in America, we have 1,600 to 2,400 pounds.
Wow.
And so they really do need the forage seed and the processing skills to help them utilize their resources better. And so it's helping to feed a nation.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Any response to that, Doctor?
Chair Buckley and Representative Richardson, just say thank you for your comments. It's been my privilege to work in many areas of China. And as you say, Inner Mongolia can be very inhospitable. It was minus 40 Celsius during some of that trip, so it gave us a chance to validate the temperature extreme data.
I would like to thank you for your time, your expertise, and the one comment I would make is the need for an international education policy is one that I think I was hoping to come from this committee hearing with one very clear idea that we'd step forward with, and I think that obviously is an idea that we should step forward with. Thank you very much for your time. Greatly appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question. Do we have a few minutes that we can just kind of ask some general questions, and if somebody from one of the three
we
panels...
We do have Bob Wilner from the International Council. And I also... can you stay for a little bit? You can sit back in the audience if you want to. We'll bring Mr. Wilner up, and if the questions come up from the committee, if anyone wants to step forward to answer them, that would be great. Committee, I also want to bring your attention to the... Department of Education memo on It's a briefing paper on current Chinese language initiatives in Oregon schools that was left for each one of us. And if we have questions on that, Pat Burke is here as well. So is Bob Wilner. Please, sir. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Extremely grateful for the invitation. And I'll try to be brief and leave time for some discussion.
Very good.
My name is Bob Wilner. I'm executive director of the Oregon International Council, whatever that is. I was 25 years in the U.S. Foreign Service. My service assignments in Korea twice, Germany once, Washington, D.C. five times. The last assignment was to Salem to work with the Oregon Governor's Commission on Foreign Language and International Studies. I retired out of that job to try to give some reality to its recommendation, to the Commission's recommendations, because my Foreign Service career had persuaded me the most difficult problem the U.S. faces in the world is at home, where the public that generally doesn't believe the rest of the world is to be taken seriously. And I'm trying to influence some change in that perception or lack thereof. There have been some encouraging developments in Oregon in the last 24 years, and you've seen some of them today. The U of Oregon Center for Applied Second Language Study is unique in the Northwest and is, I think, unique in the world for the creativity it's shown. And its director showed previously in developing language study as a performance skill, not an academic exercise. And I think that's one of the key issues. Work done by the Oregon language teachers in that pursuit has also been impressive. I've been privileged to work with them, and it's been very satisfying. Oregon is one of the leaders in the nation in this process, as reported by the president of the American Council of Teaching Foreign Languages last fall. And I'll mention one other thing, if you'll permit a little self-advertising. I'm supposed to give my speech to the staff here, sorry. And one more piece of paper here. This is what I was just getting into. There is going to be a precedent set here on March 3rd when there's a joint conference of foreign language and social studies teachers at George Fox University, the title being Pathways to Cultural and Global Understanding. We're trying to bring people together to communicate different ideas and different perceptions and develop some sort of a cross-curricular approach to the world, which has really seemed to me essential. And the current emphasis on China is wonderful as long as it contributes to that perception. I think it's very important that we approach this whole thing as an exercise in developing global citizenship. There are many problems we have to deal with. One of them is a tendency to think of the purpose of education as preparation for employment. And my wisecrack on that is if the whole purpose of education were to prepare students, young people for employment, then the employers would pay for it all. I don't accept that genial idea because the premise is flawed. And it's there to present the fallacy of that premise, that we have to approach public education as preparation for citizenship. And that's a serious business. And part of that preparation has to be development of a worldwide perspective. Insofar as study of China contributes to that perspective, it will be a great benefit. It'll take a lot of work. Oregon's Unified Educational Enterprise concept, which has the boards of education and higher education working together, is also encouraging. And one thing it can do is, we hope, make sure that students coming to the university system from the state schools will come with some foundation of global knowledge and understanding. And I'm hoping that state social studies standards will be applied to achieve that goal. Coming back to language study, let me draw on my Foreign Service experience, where I had occasion to study both German and Korean. German was a lot easier, of course. It's got a lot of similarities with English. It started earlier. But that was a help when it came to learning Korean, I think. At least it takes a lot longer. The Foreign Service experience is that to acquire a professional, useful level of knowledge in the Western European languages for a native speaker of English normally takes 4 to 6 months of full-time study. To reach the same level in one of the Asian languages, we're talking 2 years of full-time study. That's 6 hours a day in classes of 4 to 6. It's an intensive process if you really want to be able to communicate. And, you know, starting early helps, but I was 29 when I started studying Korean, and I did get to the point where I could function professionally in Korea without an interpreter. There was a lot more time, you know, 1 year at Yale and 3 years of an hour a day and 6 months at a university in Seoul, that I could do it. But that's what you're talking about. But there's also a factor of the quality of the teaching. Some of what I had was very good and some was pretty poor. Once again, the perception, the issue is, are you trying to give somebody a performance skill or teaching them academic knowledge? And the performance skill is a whole different ballgame. When it's done well, it can be very productive in any language. But I would say that I think knowing one of the East, once you know one of the East Asian languages, the transference is quicker. There are a lot of cognates between Chinese and Korean and Japanese. Basically, Chinese in Korea and Japan is sort of the Latin in English. The more scholarly words are very similar. China is 中国 or 중국 in Korean and 中国 in Japan. So, you know, there are some parallels. But there are other things that we've got to learn. I think we have to learn from China as well as about China. And with that a goal in mind, I want to read from a letter we received from our son, who is a professor of economics at Oklahoma City University and has taught a course in economics at Tianjin University every year for the last 8 to 10 years. And he wrote me this letter saying, "The Chinese have gone wholesale for educational change in the direction of the U.S. system and away from rote learning. They are also top-to-bottom second language learners. They are coming fast and hungry. At the moment, the workforce lacks certain skills in communication, management, etc. They are not, however, dropping the rigor in science and math that are their forte. Rather, they pile on the education, first an engineering degree, then an MBA or master's or PhD. Though they have low incomes, they save to pay for their child's education. While there is definitely some slack in the standards, there are so many legitimate students that the fakes and frauds are wildly outnumbered. The result is that graduating from a good Chinese university means a first-class, usually bilingual education. Universities focus on education in the traditional sense and let students worry for themselves how to keep busy when not studying. Studying is done, by the way, by most of the students most of the time." I think that's an important lesson for us to learn. And I hope it will encourage us to keep on some new habits, especially higher educational standards, despite the fact that lower enrollments are likely to emerge, at least in the short term, until the students realize these so-and-sos are serious. That was, I believe, what killed the PASS program a few years back, which was very promising and helped us make some real breakthroughs in language learning. And then it was abandoned one day with a notice on the website, the reason being, apparently, that they didn't think the high schools were going to enable the students to make it, and so the enrollments would fall off. I think that's going to be a price we're going to have to consider and accept if we really want to improve education. So I think that's all I really need to say, and I thank you very much for the opportunity to say it.
Thank you, Ms. Wilner. Greatly appreciated. Gentlemen, do you have any questions for Mr. Wilner or for anything else that's come up during the course of the hearing today? We still have most of our presenters
Mr.
here.
Chair.
Representative Lim.
Mr. Wilner, thank you very much. I understand you stayed in Korea and speak Korean fluently. Can I hear some? Jokum?
Jokum.
That's a little
bit.
Okay. Thank you very much. Speaking in Korean.
No, it was a fascinating time.
Yeah.
And I learned a great deal about people as well as the Korean language.
Thank you. When you are, Mr. Chair,
Representative,
when you are learning the language of that country, not just learning the language, you are learning the people, the culture, and the whole country.
Yes.
And especially in trade, in Asia, it begins with a relationship. that's very important for our future.
Yeah. May I tell my favorite recollection of conversation with a Korean? It was during National Assembly election in the fall of 1963, after the military government had been in power for a few years. And I was on a field trip. By then I'd gotten so I didn't need an interpreter. We were on a jeep crossing a river in a hand-powered ferry boat, and I got out, and we were in the district of the man who had been one of the real leaders of the military government and formed their central intelligence agency and their political party and was a real power. So I asked the ferry boat oarsman, well, if Kim Jong-pil gets elected, do you suppose they'll build a bridge here? And the answer was, in a word, you could understand in any language. It was, which told me a great deal about the Korean skepticism and perception. Oddly enough, he was elected. They did build a bridge there. But what I really enjoyed so much of the time was the fact that you could have a conversation with a Korean and get the feeling you knew what he was thinking.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I'll need to be excused in just a moment for another engagement. But before I go, I just wanted to mention, as we've discussed this, has been unanimity in the desire to have Chinese taught at a younger level here, and also repeatedly brought out that there are so many more Chinese that are prepared to come here than for us to go there. And it's an issue of preparedness. One of our representatives in the most recent trip had mentioned to one of the leaders there that he thought maybe he would like to come back and maybe live in China for a while. And this man said, do not come. You do not speak Chinese. You cannot even go to the grocery store. And he had a point. And in China, if you're over 70, quite often you'll speak Chinese and Russian. And if you're under 50, you speak Chinese and English because of the shift. And I mean, when Russia left China in the 50s, they just packed up and just kind of left. Before then, people were learning Russian very widely. But the bilingual effort in the society is huge. We're talking about in the more developed areas on the East Coast. But we can have so many more Chinese students come here because they have a basic ability to communicate in English, and we need to assure that the youth of Oregon gain a basic ability to communicate in Chinese so that we can participate to the level that they're participating here.
Thank you very much
for conducting this hearing, allowing me to be here.
Appreciate you having
me. Thank you so much.
Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And anybody can feel free to answer this. But and I'm going to kind of wrap this into one question. But if we were to move ahead, say 8 to 10 years, so 2015, 2017, in there, to really be effective and help with Oregon's economic development, but also with Oregon's cultural development and any other sort of development we might want to have, what percentage of our students coming out of the K-12 system, as well as out of our university system, should be fluent in Chinese? And I, you know, for sake of argument, I'm going to define fluent as probably 2 years or more in training in the language, although to really be fluent, Representative Lim, it probably takes a lot longer than 2 years, doesn't it?
It's a lifetime.
a lifetime. But I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are on that.
May I speak to that?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. We'll get you to.
Let me mention the Foreign Service. I did mention briefly the Foreign Service experience in language learning. 2 years of full-time study in a small class, 6 hours a day.
Right.
That's what you need to achieve. They don't even call it fluency, but professional competence in one of the East Asian languages. Fluency is a step beyond that. I was never rated fluent in Korean, and I was never mistaken for Korean. If you want to get to that level, you just have to put a lot of time into it. Once you have Korean or Japanese, you could probably learn Chinese somewhat quicker than that. You're still talking a year or so.
I bet. Thanks for joining us. And maybe to paraphrase the question, I think if you allow me to, you're looking for kind of a goal of what percentage of our students should be able to actually be proficient.
I'm going to give you a more direct answer than you almost ever get from anybody at a university. 5%.
5%?
There's a report out from the Asia Society. Their goal by 2015, it's interesting you chose the same year, is that 5% of the students in the United States will be studying Chinese by that time. They have a fair amount of funding and a strategic plan in place to make that happen. We're also going to be hosting here on June the 1st a meeting of people from around Oregon to look at two things. The first is what kind of demand do we have for speakers, not only of Chinese, a variety of languages. As Bob mentioned, it's important not to forget the others. And the second is then how do we increase the supply. What we're looking for is some guidance from the business community, from social service agencies, from the people who consume language users, if you will. Which languages do you need? Which levels of proficiency do you need? What combinations of skills do you need? For example, do you need software engineers with Chinese? Do you need MBAs with Russian? It's just speaking the language is not enough. You have to have professional training in some other area. Then we're going to have representatives from the government, and I would invite any members of the committee who are interested to join us to develop the kinds of policies where we can create an educational infrastructure to meet those demands. And so we hope to get 5% by 2015.
That's fantastic. We would hope you would keep us informed.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure there are members of this committee and other of our colleagues who would love to participate.
Send us information about the conference.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And did you like this?
If I could just add here that the number 5%, I won't argue with, but that number would indicate a change in people's attitudes toward foreign language learning. Because you're not going to train 5% of the population into Chinese. You're going to take a large group of students, some of whom come out fluent at the end of the process. So if we come out with 5% of our citizens fluent in Chinese, we have a lot more people studying Chinese than 5% of the citizenry. And I would also just like to put a pitch in here for languages besides Chinese. India is coming at us, and it's coming as fast as China. And although English may be the official language of India, when people are negotiating the price of vegetables at the local stall, they're not speaking English, they're speaking Hindi.
We only have a few minutes before we have to wrap up, and if you'd like to comment.
Well, thank you, Ms. Chair and Representative Cremo. When you ask the question about percentage, I would say when the stock is so low, can go any lower, any percentage is good. But Oregon as a state, we are truly the national leader. If in addition to the grass seeds, in addition to the many things, the trees we have, if Oregon become the state in this country, when the country needs language specialists, they think of no other states, think of Oregon. I think that would be a desirable goal. That's benefit for us. Thank you very much.
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I think it's more of a plug that I want to put in for folks, especially in institutions, to think about. Representative Lim, at one point, I have no idea now how long ago, helped institute the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs. And my wife, is Carol Suzuki, is the chair of that currently, though I think she's going to be done in about a month after 4 years of serving as the chair. But it's important for our other institutions to realize that commission is there. Sometimes it works in kind of a economic development, sister city, you know, sort of function and helping establish relationships. But often, and this is the part that's overlooked, I think, it is there to help people who are Chinese American, who, you know, maybe have come and become naturalized or were born here. But a lot of folks, especially Vietnam, Lao, who came in, you know, the mid-70s, not exactly planned or within sort of a traditional let's immigrate, it was more of an emergency refugee situation, they're having a difficult time adapting to the culture. And that's what that commission is there for. It's to a lot of our programs have structured institutional support where we'll have an exchange. Well, then there are folks who just come here, and they're living here, and they don't have an exchange or a tutor or a translator. They're just living here. And when they face housing discrimination, when they face barriers to how to access government agencies, that's what the Commission on Asian Affairs is here for. So right now we're in a process with that commission where the legislature is rebuilding their budget, reconstituting the membership, and we still have a lot of vacancies because, unfortunately, I think in 2003 during the special sessions, we zeroed out and laid off all the people, and that commission was running out of our basement because there was no archiving even allowed to be done. So please support the commissions. They're more than just Asian, but those are the kinds of places where we're getting a lot of understanding for people who have decided to live here, and they go home and they have relatives back at home, but they're also adjusting to life here, and this is the place for them.
Great plug. Thank you.
It's a great plug.
Very good. Thanks to all who participated today. I'll close this hearing. The Subcommittee on Higher Education, thank you very much. Thanks to Mr. Olson for preparing a wonderful hearing for us.
Thanks.